Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coburn. Public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschool children, Dr. Coburn is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coburn with Christian Worldview.
This is Dr. John Coburn. Welcome this morning to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coburn on the Tyranny Response Network. We're so happy you can join us live here in Greenville, South Carolina. We're still working out some technical difficulties, and we apologize for getting on the air a little bit late this morning, but we're happy you've joined us. Our email address this morning is questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. Do not hesitate to send an email if you have a comment or question for the show. We'll be happy to read it on air and talk to you. Or respond to your question on the air. We also have a local phone number this morning you can try, and our new technology, 201-6955. That's 201-6955 in the 864 area code. Please feel free to give us a call, and we'll try to put you on the air as well with our brand new phone technology, limited as it may be. Well, today's show is going to be interesting because we have several emails to cover, as well as a number of rather deep think stories about the Christian faith and its relation to the state, and what kind of actions Christians should take when their government intrudes into their lives. We're going to be discussing some very important issues, and will be throughout the rest of the week on this show. And you are listening to the Tyranny Response Network. I am the Tyranny Response Unit, and we hope that those of you who listen will be those, too, who will help in the fight against tyranny in this great nation of America. Again, our email address is questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. You can also try the phone, 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. We'll be happy to take your comments and questions either way this morning. Well, this is a very special day in United States history because, as you well know, or you may not know, but as many well know, this is a holiday, and the holiday is for Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King, apparently, in the minds of many, one of the greatest opponents of tyranny and the promoters of liberty for African Americans or blacks in the United States. And as his heralded and hailed because of his wonderful efforts in this regard, and has now a special holiday dedicated to him. Well, there's some question about this man's background, and I'm going to go ahead and raise some thoughts about what went on with Mr. Martin Luther King. I have an email here from Greg, who's writing in anticipation of today being Martin Luther King Day. And he writes the following. Dear Dr. Coburn, random thoughts on the MLK Day. That's Martin Luther King, for those of you who didn't quite catch the acronym. MLK Day. When you see Reverend in front of a man's name, you usually expect him to be a man ordained to be a minister of the gospel, recognized by the people he ministers to. I have heard it said that reverence belongs only to God. To revere someone, in my understanding, is to deeply respect and or admire someone. Southerners who know their history admire Robert E. Lee and other valiant men and women of their past, and rightly so. All men are sinners, but some men show forth a nature that is full of virtue, and they ought to be emulated. MLK had a reverend in front of his name, and indeed, he was revered by many. Why? Well, people of color have had their difficulties in this country over the years because of the color of their skin and other physical characteristics. For whatever reason, equality came slowly for minorities, and this was a wide open door for communist-backed agitators to start social unrest. When communists plan the overthrow of an institution or a whole country, they look for weak spots or sore points in a society. The inequality between blacks and whites was an easy target. They also needed some heroes and martyrs. King filled both orders. As the movement progressed, they got some white supremacists and others to say and do evil and stupid things in front of the cameras. Of course, this tactic made their enemies look bad, and their side drew pity, sympathy, and funding. king made a leader was in the thick of it. His legend grew, and so did reverence for him. A friend of mine told me of a black woman that he met and worked with these so-called black leaders in Selma and other places. She became disillusioned after seeing these people safely put up in the hotels, watching their people getting beaten up and torn apart by dogs. This was common among the so-called black leaders. Of course, legislators and judges jumped into the fray and passed laws, some good and others bad. The bad laws were the ones that have put many black folks into bondage of the welfare state, hence tearing apart their families and bringing all kinds of evil from that. I would have no reverence from anyone who led my people into such morass, that's a swamp for those of you who don't know what morass is, of statism. King and his cronies invited the state into a level the playing field, but at what cost? Well, that's a rather long email, but I appreciate Greg's comments. In fact, I couldn't agree more, Greg. You made some tremendous remarks about Martin Luther King and his activities, but there's even more that could be said. Now, I'm not an expert on Martin Luther King or studying the history of the King dynasty or what's actually come down from Martin Luther King, but there are widespread reports on the internet as I was reading the news and different emails that people had sent from various sources claiming that Martin Luther King actually plagiarized his entire dissertation and that he really was not a scholar like people claimed he was. He was really a troubled man in many regards as well in his personal life. Apparently the night even before he was assassinated, he was found in his hotel room with several other women. He was known a noted womanizer and noted to be unfaithful to his own wife in his personal life. Of course, in American society, that doesn't necessarily matter. Witness, of course, Bill Clinton, president of the United States, who's exonerated and loved and revered for all of, in spite or because of, I don't know, all of his exploits. Martin Luther King also, in his writings, if you look through them, Lou Rockwell at lourockwell.com has pointed out, and has pointed out in years past, was quite a Marxist or a communist in his own political philosophy. He was one who admired the writings of Marx as well as the ideals of Marx. And certainly because of that, if nothing else, people should have some, it should give people in America some pause of whether or not we should revere him as anything in terms of being a great American. On the other side, you have a man like Robert E. Lee, whose birthday is January 19th, who was a great champion for liberty, one who fought against the centralized state of Abraham Lincoln and the oppression that Lincoln caused. And one of these days we'll have a whole show just dedicated to Lincoln. We'll touch on him a little bit today. But Abraham Lincoln suspended the writ of habeas corpus. Abraham Lincoln declared an unconstitutional war against the southern states, who had a right, according to Thomas, the doctrine of Jefferson and the founding of this country, to secede when the state and federal government, the central government of the United States, became oppressive as it did. They had a right to secede, and they did secede. And when they were attacked and aggressed by the North, Robert E. Lee was a great champion, a great hero, a tremendous general who tried to fight against and stand against the evil forces of the invading North. Well, there is a true champion of liberty, a true Christian man, and a man who could be honestly revered by all of us, as Greg pointed out so thoughtfully in his email. Greg also makes another great point in his email about Martin Luther King, and maybe this will be all I'll say about him unless you'd like to call in or send some questions. And again, our phone number to call in is 201-6955. That's 201-6955 in the 864 area code. You can also send your questions to questions@policyofliberty.net. The last thing Greg had to say about him was that King and his cronies invited the state to level the playing field. But at what cost? All King really did is get the government to pass a bunch of laws that promoted the welfare state, and the welfare state, and specifically to promote black people's participation, full-fledged participation in various programs. Well, the war on poverty programs and the other programs have clearly enslaved so many black people around the United States. There are people who simply, and especially among African American or black populations, don't marry but have children by several different fathers simply because they can get another $400 or $500 a month per kid as long as they're not married. And they live their whole life on welfare because of these programs. This is not good for society. It's not good for black people anywhere to be dependent upon welfare and the handouts from other people. It's especially wrong for Christians to ever receive welfare. Christians should be those, as the Apostle Paul says, who work and who have are working enough so that they can actually give to other people that are in need of charity. They should never be those who simply rely on the state or any other person to give them food or necessities when they're perfectly capable of working themselves. As the Apostle said in 1 Thessalonians 5, if a man doesn't work, neither should he eat. And the welfare state has completely debilitated an entire race of people in the United States, black people, through its welfare programs, and largely through the efforts of this communist, Martin Luther King. Now, I realize some listeners are going to be quite shocked by my using forceful language about Martin Luther King, someone who is so revered in helping black people attain equal rights in this country. And no one is denying here at the Tyranny Response Network that there were oppressive rules and ideas thrust upon black people, and there was unrighteous segregation and so forth. We don't deny any of those things, and we are certainly clear to us that we see inequality and injustice in the land regularly on account of some of the previous laws. And Martin Luther King did perhaps help awaken people to this thought, but he still, on balance, did evil and bad for the entire race in general. Well, we have a caller on the line. I was hesitating there in my last comment because we have our first caller on the line, and we'd like to welcome Mark to the line. Mark, welcome to Christian Worldview.
Hey, John, how are you?
I'm fine.
Listen, as you're talking about Dr. King, it occurred to me that the politically correct media certainly knows a lot of these things, but they have chosen not to report them in any great detail. Dr. King, one of his great cohorts was Ralph David Abernathy. He wrote a book, I think, called The Walls Came Tumbling Down, about their time together. And he mentioned a lot of these things, the womanizing and the plagiarizing and all that kind of stuff. And it was given some cursory reporting when it first came off the presses. But as a general rule, the mainstream media has ignored the skeletons that are in the closet of Dr. King.
Well, that's an interesting comment. I really appreciate your calling this morning, Mark. Not because you're the first caller, only because you're the first caller of the week, but simply because you're giving me some information that I'm not aware of. I did not read the Abernathy book, and it sounds like they really did find some skeletons in the closet of this fellow. Everything I've read about Martin Luther King on the internet through articles and so forth point to the man being a liar, a plagiarist, and plagiarism, for those of you who don't know that big word, simply means copying an idea or words of another person and without giving them credit, attributing them to being your own work, and as well as his rather questionable or immoral lifestyle and his communist leanings. So what you're saying is those leanings go even far deeper, and this Abernathy fellow has really pulled out and sketched for us a true picture of this man's life.
Yeah, he sure did. Anyway, I appreciate all you're doing. The show sounds great, and we're passing the word out.
All right, really appreciate it, Mark. Thanks for the call.
Bye-bye.
And you're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. We're going to be going to a break real soon here. We want you to pay attention to our special producers' breaks as they come along, because our production staff has come up with some tremendous bumpers for our show. We're really pleased to be able to share them with you. You're listening to the Tyranny Response Unit. This is Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network, and we'll be back in a couple minutes.
Talk radio. Try some ear candy for thinking people. Listen to Liberty Minute with Dr. John Coben.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead. Make your day.
Welcome back to the show. This is Dr. John Coben. We hope you enjoy that. I just really appreciate that parody of Clint Eastwood, because we really hope that we can make your day here on the Tyranny Response Network. This is not a radio show for those who don't want to think, who aren't willing to be challenged and to hear the truth. This is a radio show for those who really want to go forth into the battle, equipped and armed and informed, and we're going to try to help you achieve those goals. I have another email this morning from Chuck I want to read, another long email. I appreciate these emails coming in. You can send all your emails and questions to questions@policyofliberty.net, questions@policyofliberty.net. Your phone calls are also invited this morning at 864-201-6955. Chuck writes and says, "Your show topic Friday was intriguing. Having learned history in government schools, I am now making up for some deficits and was shocked to hear the name of Lincoln, the patron saint of so many, in the worst presidents list." Just to interject, the Tyranny Response Unit had made some comments, and by the way, I am the Tyranny Response Unit, Dr. John Coben. He made some comments about the best and worst presidents, and among the worst presidents were Abraham Lincoln, number one, FDR, that's Franklin Delano Roosevelt, number two, Woodrow Wilson, number three, worst, and then Ulysses S. Grant and Lyndon Johnson. Those were the lists of five. We also gave the list of the five best, but going back to Chuck's letter, he says, "I was to hear the name of Lincoln, the patron saint of so many, in the worst presidents list, he was shocked." And then he says, "Just joking about Lincoln. I tend to agree with your list, but would like to learn more detail, especially about Lincoln. What books would you suggest? Current reading, The Boisterous Sea of Liberty, a documentary history of America from discovery through the Civil War. I haven't come to Lincoln yet in this book, but ran across an interesting passage on the fugitive slave law, whose provisions included that a person accused of being a runaway slave could be, in effect, convicted on the affidavit of one person and sent back, or forth, if not actually a slave, into slavery without a trial. Section 7 stated that any person who shall knowingly and willingly obstruct, hinder, or prevent such claimant or agent, or any person or persons lawfully assisting him, or shall aid, abet, and assist such a person so owning service or labor, directly or indirectly to escape, or shall harbor counsel or counsel such fugitive, shall for either said offenses be subject to a fine not exceeding $1,000 and imprisonment not exceeding 6 months. It is interesting to see that tyranny was alive and well so far back in our own history, and to note the harshness with which government deals with resistance to tyranny. A recent example is Dick Simkanen. By accounts of the We the People witnesses, the judge in his tax evasion case was much harsher with Simkanen than with real criminals. For treatment of his case, see, and he gives a webpage. Why might this be? Criminals do not challenge the lawfulness of government officials, while freedom activists do. Looking forward to hearing more of your insights. Well, Chuck, criminals aren't really a threat to the United States government. In fact, the criminal class, the true criminal class, are something of a boon to them. In the sense that the reason we need government is protection from predators, and if there were no crime and there were no predators, then why would we need government? I mean, would it completely lose its usefulness if the only reason it was there, to any thinking person at least, is to have welfare? Why would we have a government if we didn't need defense? And so getting rid of criminals is not in terms of complete elimination, is not the primary goal of government. They simply want to control the amount of criminals out there. There's got to be some so that they can justify their existence, but they can't be too many so they don't look like they're doing a bad job. So I think that part is precisely right. Now, jumping back to your comment about Lincoln, I think this is a very good point that you're bringing up right now, especially on a day like Martin Luther King Day, when people are reminded of things like the atrocity of slavery in the United States and so forth. Well, Martin Luther King really had nothing to do with slavery, but still, in the minds of many black folks in America, slavery is there, and it should be as a thought of a horrible atrocity of the past, as many other horrible atrocities that have occurred in America and elsewhere in the world. But Abraham Lincoln was a liberal scoundrel. He was a person who in the 1830s and 40s was the first. Excuse me, 1840s and 50s was the first. As a young congressman from Illinois, to promote central banking and a national bank in the United States. He wanted to get rid of private banking, to bring on international banking interests, and to allow the government of the United States to use deficit spending to finance its operations. From the very outset, he was on the far left. When he joined the Republican Party and became actually the first president of the Republican Party, he was a radical candidate. He was someone on the far left. The two moderate or right-leaning candidates in the Democratic Party split the ticket, and Lincoln won, I believe, with 36% of the vote the first time through. If you want to read more about Lincoln, some of the best reading I've seen is Tom DiLorenzo's book called The Real Lincoln. There are also many other books. I remember reading The Lincoln No One Has Known, or The Lincoln Nobody Knows. And if you just go to Amazon.com and do a search on Lincoln, you'll find at least 60 new books published every year on Abraham Lincoln. And so we're happy to recommend a couple of books to you. But first and foremost, I think has to be the book on by Tom DiLorenzo, The Lincoln Myth. The Real Lincoln. The Lincoln Myth is another book, by the way. Abraham Lincoln is renowned for so many things in his career that we don't know about today, but was renowned for decades afterward, especially in the South, until it was just out of mind, or the next generation came on and just had no idea what was going on. Over time, some of the atrocities that Lincoln have done have been forgotten. But he was renowned early on during Reconstruction and shortly thereafter until the early part of the 20th century by just about everybody for being the one who conquered the South. And he conquered it in a brutal way. He certainly knew when Sherman had defeated Atlanta fell, what Sherman's tactics were to go about in the South and destroying it. And there was a 100-mile or 125-mile swath of land taken through Georgia all the way to Savannah, up north through Columbia and through North Carolina, of absolute mayhem and chaos. The soldiers would rape the women, would throw the men in the street, the older men in the street, and tell them to walk, and the children, while they burned the houses down. They would steal the crops. Slaves would run to them thinking they could be liberated and try to join themselves to Sherman's foes, and Sherman would repulse them, didn't want anything to do with the slaves, and throw them out also, so that they had absolutely no hope of survival other than to live like animals, being just freed slaves, living like animals out in the woods. Probably had very few skills themselves for hunting and so forth. So it was a terrible time of plunder, of devastation and destruction, humiliation for the South when Sherman did his march to the sea. Lincoln, from the very outset, was in favor of many atrocities in New Orleans. He ordered General Butler. He allowed General Butler to issue his so-called right to rape order. New Orleans was easily occupied by the Union, who had a vastly superior navy to the pittance of a navy that the South had at the time. In fact, this is one of the great failures, I think, of the South, is not having or declaring war, going to war, without having built up first a very good navy. But Monday morning quarterbacking is always easy, isn't it? Well, at any rate, the Union had occupied New Orleans in a fairly easy short order, and what happened was the women would make fun of the soldiers by dumping bedpans on the heads of these soldiers as they'd walk by, and things such as of that nature. I remember they had no toilets in those days, and chamber pots and so forth were commonplace at that time. And so you end up having a bunch of sewage dumped on you. You'd get pretty humiliated, pretty angry. And so the right to rape order said basically if any woman does this in the city of New Orleans, she would be allowed to be treated like a lady of the night, and she could be abused and raped and so forth without recourse. Well, this is the kind of man Lincoln was. He was willing to do those sorts of things and many other things as well. I mentioned earlier that he suspended the writ of habeas corpus and would imprison people for years on end without being charged. The entire state legislature of Maryland, when it was going to vote to secede from the Union, was captured by the military of Lincoln and imprisoned in New York for 4 years without being charged. The same is also true of the legitimate government of Missouri, which was driven, not imprisoned. They were driven from their place of authority and ended up somewhere in Marshall, Texas, as I understand, while Lincoln planted his puppet government in Missouri and made sure they didn't secede too. Editors of papers were threatened routinely by Lincoln. Their newspapers were prohibited from being sent through the U.S. mails by Lincoln, and those who really were forceful were either exiled or imprisoned by Lincoln if you were an editor of a newspaper. Northern sympathizers for the South, or sympathizers in the North for the South, were run off in a regular, ran roughshod fashion by Lincoln, and very few people in the South realized just how much support there was for the Confederacy and for the South in the North. There was a tremendous movement for in favor of the South there, but it was quelched and squashed by Lincoln and his cronies, and the victors have written history since they won the War of Northern Aggression, the war between the states. We find the victors write history, and they have done as they please in brainwashing us. So while you went to the public school, as I did, and were brainwashed, you are now, Chuck, finding out what is true about Lincoln, not only from me, but as you read Tom DiLorenzo's book off the top of my head, The Real Lincoln, you will, I think, gain even more insight into this man's very wicked and diabolical life. You'll also see that he was the great architect for the destruction of liberty in the great nation of America. Well, folks, we're coming up on time for another break, and before we go on the break, I'm going to remind you that our web address is www.policyofliberty.net, and the questions you may send us through email can go to questions@policyofliberty.net. We're also accepting phone calls at 864-201-6955, and we'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to TRN. Warning, Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis. Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschool children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Welcome back to the show. This is Dr. John Coben, your Tyranny Response Unit. We're here on the Tyranny Response Network on Christian Worldview today. And we're here this morning live in Greenville, South Carolina. If you happen to be listening at a time other than 7:30 to 9 o'clock in the morning, you're not listening to this show live. You're listening to a recorded broadcast, either that's being played on the station at later in the day, or because you clicked on the webpage link, which plays the current show for the day. We're happy you've joined us. If you are listening on the recorded show, feel free to email us your questions and comments to questions@policyofliberty.net. And we're happy that you've joined us. Well, during the break, we had a caller come in, and we have on the line now with us Chuck. Chuck, welcome to the show.
Okay,
I think we've got you now. I'm sorry, we had a technical glitch. Welcome to the show, Chuck.
Hi. Yes, I was very surprised and pleased this morning to hear you're taking calls on the line. I didn't realize that was up and running yet.
Well, we're improvising here. We're doing the best we can to try to get our technology to work. And if you saw in the studio all the rubber bands and band-aids we have holding our stuff together, you'd realize that it's come a long way, but it's got a long ways to go. But we're at least getting callers on the air, and we're thankful for that.
Well, great. Well, that was my email you answered, and I appreciate it. Learning more, and it reminded me of a question that might be worth discussing. I had heard in some books about Chancellorsville and some of the other battles of the Civil War, and one of the interesting things the soldiers would run into is the Southern soldiers would run into Northern soldiers that didn't speak English. And the reason for this is that they were hiring mercenaries from Europe to come in and fight. So there would be whole platoons of German soldiers, of Polish soldiers, et cetera. But, of course, I haven't read a lot of history of the Civil War, so I was curious if that was a practice that was done on both sides, or is that just a northern phenomenon to hire European mercenaries to fight?
Well, I think I know the answer to that question. I'm not a historian, but I just happen to have read a lot and done a lot of study on the War Between the States era. And what was the book you said you'd read again?
That I'm currently reading?
Yes, the one that mentioned this about the foreign mercenaries.
Oh, that was Chancellorsville.
Okay.
And there may have been another one, too. There's several interesting books that detail battles, and they are just about historic that they're, I think they're classified as short fiction because they try to weave it together in a narrative and put together some characters, maybe fleshed out a little more than you really can from absolute documentary evidence, but just enough to pull the story together.
Well, we have a
good read.
Okay, I appreciate that. I've read a book by R.L. Dabney, who is Stonewall Jackson's personal biographer and chaplain, and he, I believe the title of the book was something like The Life and Campaigns of Lieutenant General Thomas Jonathan Stonewall Jackson, and he claimed in there that half of the captured prisoners, or the prisoners of war, in the victorious Southern Confederate campaigns in Chancellorsville, Wilderness, and elsewhere, could not speak English. And the reason for this is quite easy to understand when you look at the history of what Lincoln was trying to do. Lincoln had a very unpopular war on his hands, not only because there was so much sympathy in the North towards the South, among newspapers and otherwise, but if you think about it, if you're living in Massachusetts or Maine or Vermont or even Michigan, and there is no telephone, television, you don't have much contact with people in the South, why would you want to just go ahead and send your sons down there to kill a bunch of people down there? They really had little impact on your life as an average citizen. Now, for business, there was a different dynamic because those people were selling their goods and services, basically, well, mostly the goods, the manufactured goods to the southern states because they had a large tariff barrier. The North could not compete against European industry at the time, and they needed a tariff barrier to force the South to buy its goods. And without the tariff barrier, there would be a real reduction in profits and probably bankruptcies in the North. So there was a business interest in forcing the South and coercing the South to stay in. But at any rate, what Lincoln did after he set up the so-called war governors, which were seven or eight industrialists up in the North who sat on a board and advised Lincoln, in 1862, Lincoln persuaded the Congress to pass the Homestead Act. And the Homestead Act, of course, gave free land to people in the West who would go and work the land and develop it for a period of 7 years. And what Lincoln did was send his Secretary of State, William Seward, over to Paris to set up shop there and say, look, any of you poor folks, you're living a miserable life over here as serfs effectively in Europe. If you want to come to the United States of America, we will give you free land as long as you serve in the Union Army for 1 year. And so a lot of people over there, they figured, well, look, our life is, short, brutish, and nasty, or whatever you might want to call it at the time as a poor man in Europe. Let's go ahead and take a chance. If we die, we die. If we live, at least we'll have a better life in America. And so they came in droves to the United States through New York and elsewhere to join the Union Army in hopes of getting free land in the West. And as a result, you had, and as Dabney noted, half of the people captured by the South could not even speak English. So that's an important comment. I think it's a little known piece of history, and I appreciate the call, Chuck. Looks like Chuck dropped off the line before I could say goodbye. But appreciate the call, Chuck, and thank you for helping us bring up a very important topic on this Martin Luther King holiday. I notice that some of us are still working on Martin Luther King Day. I wonder how many people in Greenville or other parts of America actually take the holiday for Martin Luther King as a percentage of folks in your age. And other holidays probably be far higher representation or number of people who would take off of work. Well, we have some other emails that have come in today. We have one from Ralph, and he says, John, dear John, I've listened to the station 97.7 FM several times this week. That was last week. While there have been regular technical snafus, do we have snafus here? My broadcasting production staff here is looking at me with glazed eyes. So, well, anyway, he says, while there have been regular technical snafus, the content is addictive. Your commentary has been excellent, and the lectures I've heard from various speakers were interesting. That's the recorded broadcast after the live show is over. I look forward to being able to pick it up via the internet, though I fear it may be rather distracting. Keep up the good work, Ralph. I appreciate your comment, Ralph. That's so nice to get a listener giving us some praise and commentary this morning. Appreciate the email. If you have an email or a comment you can send to the show, even if it's just a praise or God forbid it, criticism of the show. Either way, please send it to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. You can also phone in your call, and we'll take your phone calls at 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. Right now, we're going to get ready to go to a break, a short commercial break, and we'll be back in a minute on the Tyranny Response Network.
You're listening to TRN. You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Tired of superficial and dull talk radio? Try some ear candy for thinking people. Listen to Liberty Minute with Dr. John Coben.
And we welcome you back to the show. This is Dr. John Coben, hopefully providing for you this morning some ear candy. Thank you for listening this morning. Please send your questions to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, comments or questions. We have here a couple of other short emails. This one is from Chester. He says, Dr. Coben, I heard you very clearly as I traveled from Paris Mountain State Park area to Greenville-Spartanburg Airport from 7:30 a.m. till 8 a.m. At I-85 and S-14, there was a brief interruption for some rock station, I think. Your content about drugs was rather thought-provoking. Chester. Well, I appreciate the comment and sending the email, Chester, and taking the time to do that. We do, of course, have very limited range at this point in the Greenville area. We are working to expand that, and if you want to be part of the expansion, either by helping us financially, because as you notice, we have little or no other than public service announcements, or work that I do personally, commercials on the show. There's no commercial support at the moment for the Tyranny Response Network. We'd be happy to hear from you if you're interested in supporting the show financially, or if you're interested in helping us expand the range of our broadcast. And you can send us a note about that to questions@policyofliberty.net, and we'll get back to you in due order. Thank you for also saying that your content about drugs was thought-provoking. If you've been listening to the Liberty Minute that's recorded throughout the day on the Tyranny Response Network, you'll note that we have been talking about how perverse incentives can end up not eliminating the drug problem, but causing police officers to treat drug dealers like they would crops. Rather than harvest them young when they have a little bit of cash, you let them grow for a while, and eventually, when they have more cash, then you pull it in. And the reason is because the police departments get to keep the money they seize. And so why in the world would they want to harvest when they're own, you know, like harvesting corn when it's 6 inches high? Why would you want to do that when there's no fruit? When if you wait till they're 8 feet high or 7 feet high or whatever it is, then you get the corn. Well, the police officers, or departments at any rate, have realized that there's no advantage of eliminating these drug dealers, and that when it's so difficult to raise property taxes and get money through property tax efforts, they certainly can get it a lot easier by allowing these drug dealers to grow into larger drug dealers and then confiscating the cash at the opportune time. Well, at any rate, appreciate your commentary and your opinion about that, Chester. The last email we have this morning so far is from Nelson, who writes in, Tyranny Response Network, great, perfect, good sound, quality, and material. Well, thank you, Nelson, for the praise. No criticisms yet of the Tyranny Response Network, and we're thankful for that. And there could be plenty of criticisms laid for various reasons as we're starting up our new broadcast. This is the second week. The beginning of the second full week will be on the Tyranny Response Network with Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. And so we're happy for your patience and thankful and grateful that you're listening in and being supportive of the show, Nelson and others. I also have a quotation that someone sent in to me some time ago. I believe this was from a fellow named Mark. It's a quote from John Calvin. For those of you Christians who have heard of things like Calvinists and forth before and have attributed John Calvin's writings to thinking about predestination, and rightly so, we also have a note here it's from Stuart, not from Mark, who says this from Calvin: "For earthly princes lay aside their power when they rise up against God, and are unworthy to be reckoned among the number of mankind. We ought rather to spit upon their heads than to obey them." Let me read that again. "For earthly princes lay aside their power when they rise up against God, and are unworthy to be reckoned among the number of mankind. We ought rather to spit upon their heads than to obey them." John Calvin here is commenting on Daniel 6:22, and how interesting it is that he uses that particular passage, Daniel 6:22, to support rebellion against the state. It's not just rebellion. They're just saying they ought to be counted as animals, spit upon their heads, and do not obey them. Well, it's an interesting commentary from John Calvin, and raises a lot of very interesting issues for us as Christians, whether or not he's right, because the Apostle Paul and Peter seem to indicate the exact opposite to some extent. Some Christians will say, well, no, you can never spit upon the head of George Bush. I mean, let's repeat this sentence again with George Bush's name in there and see how it sounds to you. "For George W. Bush to lay aside his power when he rises up against God and becomes unworthy to be reckoned among..." Excuse me. "For George W. Bush lays aside his power when he rises up against God and is unworthy to be reckoned among the number of mankind. We ought rather to spit upon George W. Bush's head than to obey him." How does that sound? Should we really do that? How many of you are willing to rebel against George W. Bush today? Well, I am. The Tyranny Response Unit is ready. I'm not sure that other people are ready, though, and I think they would have a real problem with out-and-out rebellion. Now, my reason for rebelling, I think, would be grounded in a scriptural stance, and I would have a rational and reasonable response in my rebellion, and the rebellion might be passive. But I do not have an attitude of rebellion against God, and I certainly don't want to defy authority in general, and that's a concern I have for many Christians who seem to rebel for almost no reason other than being rebellious. What I'm more interested in here is this John Calvin doctrine of whether or not it's okay to, once a ruler disobeys God, to rise up against him and spit on his head, treat him like an animal. Is that true or not? Well, send us an email and give us your opinion on that to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. You can also phone this morning to 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955 if you have a comment on this Calvinist doctrine of spitting on the heads of rulers. I think I'm going to save that quote and read it time after time here. And it's going to end up with some very important ramifications for the show. In fact, I might come back to it and read Daniel 6:22 when we come back from our next break. I also want to direct you to the front page of Policy of Liberty. The front page of Policy of Liberty has many links to different sound bites from the show, the current show, or the most recently recorded show, I should say, is all available on the head page of Policy of Liberty, as well as some photographs of the Tyranny Response Unit. And at the bottom of the page, there are two PDF file links. The first one, at the very, very bottom, is called a quiz about the four Christian views of public policy. And if you click that quiz, you'll get 15 questions, a self-guided test, in a sense, not too long, that helps you self-correct again, with a self-correcting quiz, find out where you stand on issues of public policy, how you view the state, what its nature is, and what the Christian response to the state should be and the state's actions. I would encourage you all to take that quiz and then email your results into the show, or call your results into the show, just so we can talk about the biblical understanding you have about the state. The second link that's there is the deep questions for Dr. Coben's radio show. And what I've done is I put it together in a PDF file, 17 very deep questions, I think, for those of us who are interested in talking about the Christian worldview. If you would go ahead and pull that up and read through those, you'll have an opportunity to send an email back answering one or more of those questions that we can discuss on the air. I'll be trying to read one, two, or maybe even three of these questions each day on the show at some point. In fact, we'll probably be getting to those after the next break coming up here shortly, and really get into some heavy issues, I suppose, for those of us who hold to the Christian faith and want to know what our responsibility should be towards government. But we're coming up, as I said, on a break. We'll be back here in about 2 minutes on the Tyranny Response Network.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media, Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net, that's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Welcome back to the Tyranny Response Network. This is Dr. John Coben on Christian Worldview. Daniel 6, chapter 22, and I'll read the context starting at 6:21, which was cited by John Calvin in his article, or his commentary. 6:21 says, "Then Daniel said to the king, 'O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths so that they have not hurt me, because I was found innocent before him, and also, O king, I have done no wrong before you.'" Well, I'm not sure, without reading Calvin's commentary directly, how that relates or how he derived his statement as he did. And once again, that statement was, "For earthly princes lay aside their power when they rise up against God and are unworthy of to be reckoned among the number of mankind. We ought rather to spit upon their heads rather than to obey them." And that was John Calvin's commentary on this verse in Daniel 6:22. Once again, if you have a comment about that passage or that commentary of John Calvin, please don't hesitate to give us a call at 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, or send your questions to questions@policyofliberty.net. Well, a couple of the big questions that we have for the day from the aforementioned questions for the radio show link on policyofliberty.net homepage. Is this. The first question is, do Christians have a right of self-defense? If so, under what circumstances? Against criminals or also governments? Are there any instances in which Christians must not defend themselves? What biblical passages can be used to support the doctrine? Why didn't Christ and the apostles defend themselves against the Roman state? Well, this is a big think question, and for those of you who are not used to thinking deeply, this may be a little bit shocking or puzzling or a little bit over your head, but I want to read the question again. I want you to thoughtfully consider what it's saying, because this question is so fundamental to our entire understanding of public policy, to our understanding of the state, to our understanding of what our response should be to the state, that you need to begin to grapple with this if you're going to be effective in promoting the truth in this world. And this is about Christian worldview. This is a show dedicated to the promotion and enhancement of the Christian worldview unashamedly. Now, we talk about politics and public policy and other issues related to the social order in which we live, but all ultimately want to bring it back down to these very fundamental things about what is the Christian's role and response in society, especially as it relates to the state and public policy. Let me read that question again. Do Christians have a right of self-defense? If so, under what circumstances? Against criminals or also governments? Are there any instances in which Christians must not defend themselves? What biblical passages can be used to support the doctrine? Why didn't Christ and the apostles defend themselves against the Roman state? Well, in answer to the first part of this robust question, do Christians have a right of self-defense? My particular view is yes, they do. They have a right of self-defense. And the reason I say they have a right of self-defense is because I do not see John the Baptist rebuking the Roman soldier when he comes to them and says, "What should I do?" And John the Baptist says, "Don't defraud anybody," but he does not say, "Don't you know, be in the military. It's wrong. Well, you say, well, what does it have to do with self-defense? Well, this is what it has to do with self-defense. The entire reason we have a military, the fundamental public interest reason, is because we believe that we can defend ourselves as a collective better than we can as individuals. So if we're attacked by a foreign nation of aggressors, it's easier to have a collective military under a unified chain of command rather than all of us who are in our individual wagon train just trying to get out our own shotguns and rifles and so forth and fend off the invader. That's the entire justification for having limited government. Now, some people could challenge that, by the way. There's no necessary proof that centralized military is right or effective, but I tend to accept that until I'm convinced otherwise. And I'm going to say Christians have a right of self-defense, and therefore, because they have a right of self-defense, they have the right to use government to help defend them, because the primary purpose of government is to defend us from predators. So I believe that they do, because on that based on that passage, as well as the passage, I believe it is in Luke 22, where Christ tells Peter and the other apostles to there's going to come a time where you're going to have to beat your plowing devices into swords, and let him carry a sword and take one to defend himself if he's going to be going on the way. I believe it's Luke chapter 22, verse 16. If someone has the exact reference, please go ahead and call in and read it. Off the top of my head, I don't have it. But at any rate, because Christ did tell people to arm themselves, I see that as another indication that we can and should defend ourselves. In addition to that, husbands are required to defend their families and provide for their families' needs. And I think defense is a part of the provision that husbands need to provide. We are to lay down our lives for our wives. But what does it mean to lay down your life for your wife if you're not defending her? Does it simply mean that the guy starts about to take a shot at your wife, so you jump ahead of her and take the bullet? Don't try to shoot the guy who's trying to shoot her. Just take the bullet and die, so that after you die, then he can go ahead and shoot her with his second shot. I don't think so. I think what it's saying is you do all that you can to fight for your families and protect them, which means that as a man, you can take up your arms and go ahead and shoot those who would try to shoot you, who would aggress you, including criminals and others. So in what circumstances, the second question, second part of this long question, to me, any time you are being aggressed by anyone who has no reason to aggress you, you have a right to defend yourself. In fact, you may even carry it so far as saying any time someone aggresses you, even if they have some legal rationale for doing so, you have the right to defend yourself. And I think that's probably the correct way to look at it. Any time someone is aggressing you, you can go ahead and make a defense and kill him first if he's going to try to kill you or your family. Do you have a comment about that? Do you think that's right? Is that a Christian view? What about turning the other cheek, as Christ said? Well, what do you think about those things? Give me a call at 864-201-6955, and we can discuss it. The third part of the question says, against criminals are also governments. In other words, there are people out there who are murderers, robbers, rapists, so forth. Most people would say if there's a right of self-defense, we can defend ourselves against those people. Those people are criminals, and yeah, we can attack them. But what about the state? What about if there are government officials who are elected or appointed? Can you defend yourself against government agents? Well, I think that you can. Well, some Christians don't, but I think that a government official who starts robbing you through legal means or otherwise becomes a criminal himself and therefore is subject to being blasted. We can defend ourselves against those people. You may disagree. I would like to hear from you and have some discussion about that. Are there any instances in which Christians must not defend themselves? This is a big question, big, deep question. The apostles and Christ certainly didn't when they were put to death or going to be killed because of their religious preaching of the gospel and so forth. They didn't stand up with an army and try to attack the state. Well, I'm persuaded by that to some extent, at least at this point, that if I'm being persecuted for the sake of the gospel and I have no way to flee, that maybe I should indeed lay down my arms and die, but only because of their example. Otherwise, I see that the right of self-defense is paramount, and that I have no reason to believe that I shouldn't defend myself. Also, it calls into question our entire American Revolution, if we the War of Southern Independence. When I say the American Revolution, I'm talking about the War of Independence from England. How can we defend ourselves and attack the king coming over here on the grounds of wanting to have religious liberty, especially the Baptists, if Christ didn't do that, and neither did the apostles. Well, some might say, and I think I would agree, that they lived in a different time. They didn't have the ability to rebel or to carry arms or to overcome the Roman army. And it would have been futile to try. And in Christ's case, he didn't want to because he needed to become the sacrifice for his elect. And certainly that is a special case, but in the case of the apostles, their goal was not to overcome the state, but indeed, and they didn't have any chance to overcome the state, but to preach the gospel and suffer whatever befell them. Well, I've given a few of the biblical passages and used as a fourth of doctrine off the top of my head, and as the next part of that question, why didn't Christ and the apostles defend themselves against the Roman state? I think I also gave you an interesting thing to think about there as well. They just couldn't do it, and if they could have, I think they probably would have to some extent. Now, that's debatable, and I know it's conjecture. If you have a thought about it, give us a call at 864-201-6955, 201-6955, or send your questions to questions@policyofliberty.net. And this is Dr. John Coben on Christian Worldview on the Tyranny Response Network. We'll be back after the break in just a minute or two.
You're listening to TRN. Tired of superficial and dull talk radio? Try some ear candy for thinking people. Listen to Liberty Minute with Dr. John Coben. Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschool children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Welcome back to the show. This is Dr. John Coben on Christian Worldview. We've just been discussing the Christian's right to self-defense. If Christians do not have a right of self-defense, that's truly not biblical, or it's wrong, as some Christians claim in the Anabaptist tradition, the pacifist tradition, then really we have no reason to have government whatsoever. Christians should be opposed to government, should not participate in it, and should really be looking for some sort of political anarchy. I'm not talking about chaos, I'm just talking about the absence of an organized government or state. Because the only, or the main, at least, the main fundamental reason we have a government is because we want to have self-defense, common defense, provide for the common defense, as our founding fathers said. If there is no need for self-defense, if we need to just lay down in front of the railroad tracks of anybody who comes and attacks us, then we have no reason for the state at all. So I'm accepting that we have the right of self-defense. Some of you might want to argue with me about that, or some of you might want to call and give your reasons philosophically why we do have a right of self-defense, and we'd love to hear your comments either sent to questions@policyofliberty.net or phoned in to 864-201-6955. That's the first big think question, and it's not the only time we'll ask that question on this show, but we'll try to read one, two, or even three possibly a day of these deep think questions, which you'll find listed on the homepage of policyofliberty.net. Well, on this part of the show, before I get possibly to a second question off of that list, I want to address a couple of other articles and things that have come up in the news recently. One is to address the nature of the state. What is the state actually good or evil? Is the state our friend, as the Christian's friend, or is the state the Christian's enemy? And here in WorldNet Daily, we had Fox judge exposes Fed's lawbreaking. And here we see known simply as Judge on Fox News Channel, Andrew Napolitano has released a blockbuster book on the misuse and abuse of power in the U.S. criminal justice system. And today, WND readers, WorldNet Daily readers, can get it at a special discount price, since they're making a little ad for their book here. Constitutional Chaos, What Happens When the Government Breaks Its Own Laws, is the name of his book. It makes the case that there is a pernicious and ever-expanding pattern of government abuse in America's criminal justice system. Napolitano's vast experience in the legal world has prompted him to adopt as a creed, "The government is not your friend." He reiterates that creed in the introduction of Constitutional Chaos, where he says, "It should be against the law to break the law. Unfortunately, it's not." In the early 21st century, America, a long-standing, dirty little secret, still exists among public officials, politicians, judges, prosecutors, and police. The government, federal, state, and local, is not bound to obey its own laws. I know this sounds crazy, but the events recounted in this book prove it true. Constitutional Chaos should be a wake-up call for every American who prizes personal liberty and a free society. Because it breaks the law, the government is not your friend. When I arrived on the bench, I had an impeccable conservative Republican law and order credentials. When I left 8 years later, I was a born-again individualist after witnessing firsthand how the criminal justice system works to subvert and shred the Constitution. If you think you've got rights, you think you've got rights that are guaranteed, well, think again, because the government breaks the law and denies it. The government is not your friend. Eternal vigilance is the price of liberty, particularly when it comes to the American criminal justice system. Nowhere else does the state have greater raw power over individuals, life, liberty, and property, and nowhere else are our constitutionally guaranteed rights and freedoms under such relentless, subtle, and ultimately devastating attack. Because the government breaks the law and hides it, the government is not your friend. And he goes on to discuss in greater detail exactly why beyond his introduction there. Well, if this fellow, Napolitano, this former judge, federal judge, is correct, what does it tell us about the nature of the state? Is this an anomaly? Do we find the state is usually the friend of the church or the friend of liberty, the friend of the rights and of individual rights and freedom? Or do we find the state as intrinsically this way, that everywhere we go, even in America, we find states becoming wayward and corrupt? Or is this fellow Napolitano just all washed up? He's just lying, or he's just making up stories in order to publish a book. He has sour grapes because he's no longer a judge, maybe, and so he published a book and he's just upset. Well, I guess you can say that and make your case. And if you do have something to say about his book, we'd be very interested to hear from you about it. On the other hand, if he's right, what does it tell us about government in general? If America is this bad, what about the constitutional rights or other guarantees that would be handed over to citizens in other countries, in Germany or in France or Italy or Chile or Brazil or China or other places in the world? What is America an anomalous in this sense? Well, we need to think about the nature of the state. And in this show, we want to talk about government because and the state because it seems to be so commonly presumed that the state is the friend of the church, when there really is hardly any historical evidence to grant such an idea. And there, not only that, there seems to be so much current talk, such as this fellow's book, indicating quite the contrary is the truth. We do not find the state being the friend of the church at all. Well, we have an email who came in from Stuart this morning, and he simply says, "Time is short for America. Please forward this. Name this person who school children and government employees in the United States are forced to bow down to. He was a liar, a commie, a philanderer, and a bully. Liar, he was flagrantly guilty of massive plagiarism, a form of lying, but the school that awarded his PhD refused to void when the proof emerged. He was a commie. There are photographs all over the internet showing this person as a communist training camp, at a communist training camp. Just enter the name into a search engine with the words Highlander Folk School. Search diligently, though, because they are trying to bury this information. You might have to mine your way through several pages of results. Philanderer. He liked to mess around with women who were not his wife, a lot. And a bully, a beater of women. Sources who know what is contained in the suppressed FBI tapes where his motel room was bugged the night before his killing, say they contain all sorts of the grunts, groans, and screams of a sound beating. Okay, we'll skip that part for the radio. But at any rate, he's pointing out exactly what was going on in this particular room. Who is this person? And he says it's Martin Luther King. Well, we appreciate the email. One thing about reading these emails live and direct on the air, folks, is I don't have time to screen out parts that might not be appropriate for radio, so excuse the abruptness on that. Don't mean to undermine what you're saying, Stuart. You're just reporting, I think, what you think is the truth about what's going on here, and that is excellent news for us. Martin Luther King is probably a great scoundrel from all what it sounds like, even though he's revered by so many folks as being a good man. If you have any other comments about Martin Luther King, please do send us an email to questions@policyofliberty.net, or you can call us at 864-201-6955. We're going to have a short break. This is Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network with Christian Worldview. We'll be back in just a minute or two.
Warning, Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but he has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as he did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead. Make your day.
Welcome back. We indeed hope we've been making your day today at least a little brighter, a little more thoughtful as you think about the great issues of the day. I have another article I want to bring up this morning about the media bias towards the left. Just read a paragraph from Anthony Gregory, who had posted something about Real TV News. That's the article titled Real TV News on LouRockwell.com, which is a great site. Lou Rockwell is a champion for liberty, as well as the folks there who are writing on his site. He says, this is Anthony Gregory, he says, for the libertarian, or even the more generally the political skeptic, or for that matter the political literate, the television news media have little to offer. The mainstream news stations are distinctly establishment, quite left liberal, and insufficiently critical of the status quo, even when their general inclinations on an issue happen to be decent. The supposedly iconoclastic alternative, Fox News, is even worse most of the time, and especially in its glorifications of the Republican warfare state. What is a freedom lover or a literate skeptic of the political establishment to do? The internet clearly provides the best, most diverse, most reliable selections of news sources. And I'll stop the reading there and just comment that I think Gregory is quite correct in this. I don't, for one, have a television in my home. And not because I think there's so much immorality on the television that I don't want to watch it, although that's probably true. The main issue for me is that it's not only a waste of time, but I don't want to be preached at by the imbecilic statists that get on there all the time with their particular views. I don't want to be preached at by the commercials. And I don't want to be exposed to incorrect versions of reality. Whereas the internet provides an alternative source that's wide open for competition. There is no regulation of what can be posted there, and therefore there is no control by government. And the internet is made wide open the opportunity for us to hear alternative news sources, which are a far greater interest to me than simply listening to the mainstream media. So we've been thankful in this day and age that the cause of truth and liberty has been advanced so much by the internet, and that we're able to get alternative news sources in spite of the fact that there is such a strong bias in the media towards the left. Fox News is probably just a little bit to the left of center, pretty close to moderate, and the rest are all, in my view at any rate, quite a ways towards the left. In terms of the Christian relationship to the state, there's a couple things that have come up in the news today that I think are worthwhile reading. One is that the Supreme Court has rejected the challenge to inaugural prayer. Fox News reported that a federal judge on Friday rejected a challenge brought by atheist Michael Newdow to stop the invocation prayer at President Bush's second inauguration. On Thursday, Newdow told U.S. District Judge John Bates that having a minister invoke God in the January 20 ceremony would violate the Constitution by forcing him to accept unwanted religious beliefs. But one day later, Bates ruled that Newdow wouldn't get far in his legal challenge and noted that the absence of a clearly established violation of the Establishment Clause. Of course, the government had asked the U.S. District Court of the District of Columbia to dismiss the current lawsuit, saying the invocation had been widely accepted for more than 200 years. And what's interesting for us, I suppose, in terms of the Christian worldview, is we simply do not find any reason for us to believe that the state is the friend of the church, and therefore, why would we want to have presidential prayers at any rate? Why do we want to have, this is a good question, I guess, to ask, why should we have a prayer or people swearing it on the Bible at state-run functions like this, or inauguration of a president? It almost gives a veneer or in some sense an approval of from the Christian right saying, hey, this is a guy that's our man to help us in preaching the gospel, to help us establishing order and truth in society and so forth. Those are rebuttable or questionable points, aren't there, or beliefs, simply because we see, as we just read in the book from Napolitano, that government is so rigidly corrupt in the United States and so much a violator of our rights. Why do we want to give any kind of stamp of approval of Christianity to it when we see so much of the opposite occurring in its ranks? In fact, historically, we don't find much support for the state being the friend of the church. So there's a real question here whether or not we should have inaugural prayers and so forth. From my vantage point, at any rate, one might make a case for it, or one might be upset that it's being taken away or diminished by these atheists, showing the decline of American religious influence in society. But I have a more fundamental question. It's not just a nostalgic or traditionalist one. It's why in the world has there been any lacquer coating of the gospel or Christianity put on the state when it's so rigidly opposed to our values and principles as Christians? That's a question I have, at any rate, for you. If you have a comment about that, please send it to questions@policyofliberty.net, and we'll talk about it. Or you can call in this morning at 864-201-6955. Just a reminder, if you're listening at any time other than 7:30 to 9 o'clock in the morning Eastern Time, Monday through Friday, you're listening to a recording of this broadcast, and obviously the phone call is not going to help. You'll not be able to be on the air. However, the emails are received 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And even if you're listening to the recorded show, if you send us an email, we will be able to get you on the air the next time the broadcast occurs, Monday through Friday, 7:30 to 9 Eastern Time in Greenville, our flagship station on the Tyranny Response Network. The relation to the state is also talked about in LouRockwell.com, an article by Murray Rothbard. Murray Rothbard has an article called Living in a State-Run World. And before we get to this, we're going to take just a short break. When we come back, we'll read a little bit from his article, Murray Rothbard. This is Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Let's consider Christian stewardship in terms of financial planning. Saving, eliminating debt, lessening the burdens that can accompany a serious illness or accident. One of the most important reasons that we acquire life, disability, and long-term care insurance is because we want to love our neighbors as ourselves. After all, what kind of testimony do we give if we actually plan to rely on the charity of others? If we love others, especially our church and family members, we should do careful financial planning. Some Christians have 401k plans and need to be rolled over into a better investment alternative. Still others need to protect their wives and children by purchasing some inexpensive life or health insurance. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service. As an independent financial planning firm with a wide range of products, we're here to help you become a better financial steward. Find out about our many services at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Indeed, while other radio stations are out there promoting frivolous talk and lighthearted thinking, whether it's the Oprah or the Donahue of the airwaves or even just typical conservative talk radio that you get, this station, the Tyranny Response Unit, promotes deep thinking. And those who want to talk about issues that are of true importance, especially to Christians in this day and age. This is Dr. John Coben with Christian Worldview. Well, right before the break, I mentioned we'd be reading this excerpt from an article by Murray and Rothbard called Living in a State-Run World. Now, Murray Rothbard is not a Christian. He's a libertarian and a founder, or he was a libertarian, died several years ago, a founder of the Libertarian Party in the United States. And quite an academic, both as an Austrian economist and one who would do political history. One of my favorite people to read, actually, is Murray Rothbard. But having said that, I think he has some things which will address the Christian worldview, and I think that could be of considerable interest to us. He writes this, Republican administrators often pose moral and practical questions for libertarians insofar as many jobs become available in government, whether directly employed by the White House or regulatory agencies as writers and intellectuals. Is it right or wrong to accept such jobs? And regardless of who's in power, many free market economists face the ongoing dilemma of working in state-funded institutions. Freedom-minded citizens, too, face the problem of whether it is proper to work in the for the public sector and in what capacity. In this article from Liberty, Volume 1, Number 3, December 1987, Murray Rothbard offers his perspective. The articles by Mr. Waters and Wallstein in Liberty, September-October 1987, highlight a vitally important question for libertarians. How can we act and act morally in a state-controlled and dominated world? It seems to me, writes Rothbard, that the most important concern is to avoid the twin and equally destructive traps of ultra-purist sectarianism, where indeed we would not permit ourselves to walk on government-owned streets and sell out opportunism in which we could become supervisors of concentration camps while still claiming we are libertarians in some far-off ideal world. Opportunists are people who severely split theory from practice, whose ideals are tucked away in some closet or trophy and then have no bearing on the daily lives. Sectarians, on the other hand, suffer from what the Catholics would call the error of scrupulosity and are always in danger of boxing themselves in to become hermits and virtual martyrs. All well and good, but to avoid both pitfalls, we need some criteria to guide us. I won't read the next four pages of deep thinking that he, because we don't have time in the air to read it all, but I want to jump ahead to his conclusion. Let's take a concrete case, says Rothbard, and see how our proffered criterion works. An old friend of mine, an anarcho-libertarian Austrian economist, accepted an important post as an economist in the Federal Reserve System. Licit or illicit? Moral or immoral? Well, what are the functions of the Fed? It is the monopoly counterfeiter, the creator of state money. It cartelizes privileges and bails out banks. It regulates or attempts to regulate money and credit, price levels, and the economy itself. It should be abolished, not simply because it is governmental, but because its functions are per se immoral. It is not surprising, of course, that this fellow did not see the moral problem the same way. It seems to me, then, that the criterion, the ground on which we must stand to be moral and rational in a state-run world is to, one, work and agitate as best we can in behalf of liberty, two, while working in the matrix of our given world, to refuse to add it to its statism, and three, to refuse absolutely to participate in the state activities that are immoral and criminal per se. Well, I wonder if he would say then also this fellow was wrong for working at the Federal Reserve System, which has to be one of the greatest progenitors of evil that we find in the world. Well, I happen to agree. I think Rothbard has a lot that we can learn from and apply to a Christian worldview. In my perspective, Rothbard's second point here, while working in the matrix of our given world, the refusal to add to statism, I think is very important. It's very key. It's one thing for us to walk on a government-laid road or drive on that road. It's another thing entirely to go ahead and request welfare state benefits that would help us, whether by taking indirect benefits, by sending children to public schools, which is also immoral for other reasons, but also taking welfare checks or aid to families with dependent children or student grants. student loans, anything which costs other people money, we should not do, and we should not add to statism that way. We should not also add to statism by voting for anything that will give us more regulation, such as voting for George Bush and getting the Patriot Act, or voting for George Bush and getting the Homeland Security Department and more government that way. These things add to statism and I think are opposed to the Christian worldview. We also, as Rothbard said, could work to agitate as best we can on behalf of liberty. And this is probably the best we can do, even if we do end up utilizing benefits from the state involuntarily, like the roads being thrown down before us, and not really being able to live in the world without using those roads. We can still agitate for liberty by what we say and what we write, and I think Rothbard makes a good point there. And then his third point, to refuse absolutely to participate in state activities that are immoral and criminal per se, is certainly something we must do. It's one thing to go and work for the post office, folks, but if you're out there with child services, confiscating children from the homes of homeschooling parents or evangelicals, then you're just in the wrong business. You're doing something that is completely wicked. If you're out there working and for Planned Parenthood or for the Department of Education, and many other departments like Health and Human Services that deal with family control, you're doing something that's wrong. You have to get out of that business and not be part of that bureau. Christians cannot and may not and must not participate. They can, obviously, because they're sinners and they're capable of it, but I mean they may not and should not and must not participate in any organization of government that is purely bent on doing anti-Christian wicked things. And that includes parts of the Department of Defense or Justice when they pull off the Waco raids or the Ruby Ridge type of raids. We simply must not participate as Christians as any in any function of government that we would be antithetical to biblical principles. And for that, I appreciate what Dr. Rothbard has to say. Again, his articles are available on lewrockwell.com. This is a show for thinking people. It's not a show for those who are lightweights and don't want to think and don't want to influence the world for truth. It's a show that will hopefully stimulate you to change your thinking or to improve your thinking. It's not a show where you can just get a laugh all the time, although we will have some remarks hopefully now and then that are funny and entertaining. But we want to help you improve your ability to reason as a Christian and understand what it means to have a Christian worldview as it reflects with respect to public policy. Your questions and comments are always welcome. Questions may be sent 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to questions@policyofliberty.net. And then you may also phone the show locally between 7:30 and 9 weekday mornings at 864-201-6955. But we just have a couple minutes left in the show, and we're not going to have a chance to go through any of the other deeper questions, but we'll certainly get back to those tomorrow and other days during the week. I just want to close the show with one quick news story that came up, or somebody that brought up the issue of DDT again. After the tsunami hit late December last year, there were many people affected with deadly diseases afterwards, and one of these deadly diseases has been malaria, which is carried by mosquitoes. The environmentalist crowd has successfully outlawed DDT as if it were something evil, when in fact DDT was responsible for eliminating and almost getting rid of completely not only mosquitoes but also malaria. And now that DDT has been outlawed wrongly by the environmental wacko group, we end up in, and I don't mean that despectively of any person, but against these, against DDT, when any of these groups crazily get rid of DDT, they also get rid of people by promoting malaria in the world. Just want to make a quick comment about that. We're coming towards the end of the show today. Let's remember, as Ken commented to me earlier, that we need to pray for our President Bush, that he might allow us to lead a godly and peaceable life, just leave us alone, and also that he might be saved, if he indeed is not saved, as there's some doubt in my mind, at any rate, judging by the fruit. We need to pray for individuals, even though they're in sin, because God calls us to do so. And so let's remember to do that. I appreciate that comment, Ken. And we'll be back with the next Christian Worldview tomorrow. We welcome your questions and phone calls then, and we look forward to seeing you for another edition of Christian Worldview. Signing off on the Tyranny Response Network now is Dr. John Coben.
You've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on TRN. Join us again tomorrow morning right here at 97.7 FM on the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.